steal every girl he thought Paul was interested in, treating it like winning some kind of prize. Taylor seemed more interested in the game, so Paul stopped fighting it, stepping aside and settling for another. There were always others to choose from. Taylor wasn't really invested in any of them, but he loved letting Paul know he could do it. Paul wasn't going to step aside and let Taylor have Reese. No way in hell. He convinced himself he'd invested too much time already. A few days later, Paul finally found a minute to be alone with Reese. He took her by the arm and pulled her into the compressor room, using the act of stealth as an excuse to get a little closer to her than he normally would have dared. He stood next to her, within inches. He could smell the fact that she used mango-scented shampoo, and he breathed it in deeply. She seemed uneasy with the proximity, and he pulled back a little, but it bothered him how, even after their truce and all the fun they seemed to have when they were together, she still acted like she hated being too close to him. "Are you going to the movie tonight?" he asked. "Everyone seems pretty excited about it." "I didn't hear about it." Of course, no one at the shop would tell her about a movie they all planned to see. Dobbs's comment about her being shunned by the others came to mind. He had to work to keep from getting angry, but the idea made him want to hurt someone. "There's finally a new movie at the theater. People have been talking about it. It's supposed to be good. Are you going?" "Are you?" "I'll go if you go." "What about Taylor?" Paul shrugged and tried to make light of it. He really wasn't sure how it would work. He just wanted to spend some time with her. It had been too long. "Tay's a big boy. If he doesn't want to come, he'll find something else to do." Paul hoped he would. She smiled. "Okay. See you there?" Paul lingered but started acting anxious. "Reese, would you mind?" He hesitated. "No, I am not going to lock myself in my apartment." "It couldn't hurt to ask," he chuckled, deciding to let her think that is what he was about to say. He thought better of his real question and chickened out. Standing so close made him yearn to touch her. He'd almost asked permission to kiss her, a foreign concept for him, but she still believed he just wanted to be friends, and he didn't want to scare her away. Yet. "Again and again?" she giggled, assuming she'd finished his sentence for him. "I'm going to get my fins if you ask one more time. Then we'll see if you can still tell me it doesn't hurt to ask." She air-swatted at him, pretending to have fins in her hands. He jumped away from her and laughed. He remembered the large bruise on his arm and how long it took to heal after their morning on Duna Cay. "I'll see you tonight," he said as he watched her walk back into the office. He sighed, licking and twitching his lips a few times, wondering why she had him acting like a nervous teenager, something he had never been. Chapter 16. They'd made it through a third of the movie. Paul sat with Taylor on the same row as everyone from the shop, but they'd all somehow wrangled the seating so that Reese ended up on the row in front of them, four seats to Paul's left, surrounded by strangers. Paul was livid about the way they were treating her. He wanted to move down a row to sit with her, but that would be the worst thing he could do with Taylor around. He and Taylor had been friends since grade school. They were both evenly matched in social status, wealth, athleticism, interests, and looks, though Paul always told people Taylor was better looking than him. When it came to girls, Taylor's approach to getting laid differed from Paul's. Paul made it clear up front that he wasn't interested in a relationship. Playing with a girl's emotions only created drama in a breakup of something that had never been put together in the first place, and it always left him feeling guilty. Taylor, however, seemed to have some deep, unfulfilled need to make girls fall in love with him, fight over him, cry, and beg him to act like he loved them as much as he claimed he did. It had become an untouchable topic between them after the last time they'd argued about it. They'd ended up in a fist fight, and their other friends, David and Bryce, had to pull them off each other before one of them wound up in the hospital. Paul watched Reese and could tell something was wrong. She seemed uncomfortable, agitated. He assumed being banished and left out had upset her. She finally got up and walked out. Paul leaned over to Taylor. "All that beer is knocking on my bladder." He got up and walked out too. Reese was already through the lobby and out the door when he spotted her. He ran after her. "Hey, where are you going? Something's wrong?" She looked shocked to see him and ducked her head, avoiding eye contact. Nothing's wrong. I'm tired. I'm going home.
Princess Denaria, drop the shit and tell me what's wrong.
He pulled her chin up. She rolled her eyes at what he called her. It's just that movie. Those guys making those women think they care for them when all along they're just trying to win some contest by having the ugliest girlfriend. It depresses me. I couldn't watch it anymore. I don't believe that people are really that cruel. She bit her lip and glanced up at him, realizing he'd been cruel to her at one time. Well, most people. Paul pressed his lips into a thin line and looked off at nothing in particular.
Yeah, I'm still sorry about that.
His serious gaze fell back on her with a long blink.
I'd take it all back if I could.
It was an honest misunderstanding, she said in a chipper tone, he knew, to try and salvage his feelings. And back to the movie incident. He'd expected her to tell him it hurt to be snubbed at the theater, her reason for leaving. It would have been all he needed to exact revenge on the people who hurt her. But instead, fictional characters being cruel to each other upset her even more than real life. He tried to wrap his head around it. He also made a mental note to tell Taylor he didn't want to participate in their ugly date contest anymore. He and his old buddies from high school still managed to get together annually for what they called Testosterfest, 4 days of hard playing, hard drinking, and hard loving. They alternated each year between bringing an attractive girl and an ugly girl to see who could win the secret prize for bringing the ugliest or prettiest date. The girls never had any idea what they were up to, so it never dawned on him it was cruel. She amazed him once again. Reese had given him yet another reason to be ashamed, and he didn't know what to say. He just stared at her, wondering if it was really possible for anyone to be so good.
I'll walk you home.
It would give him a chance to spend more time with her, to watch her facial expressions, to listen to her stories and her laughter, if only for the few minutes it would take to get her home. No, go back and finish the movie. I'm just being silly. He scowled at her. He thought he might be getting used to being rejected, but he didn't like it.
I don't want to finish the movie. I want to walk you home.
He grabbed her by the elbow and dragged her until she finally gave in. They walked by the local ice cream shop, an excuse to extend the time he could spend in her company.
I want ice cream. Come on.
He took her hand and pulled her up the steps of the shop, and they ordered cones. They found a table on the small deck in front of the store and started eating. The warm night made eating them more like keeping up with the melting drips, and Paul watched, enthralled, for several seconds as her tongue swirled around the cone before he had to stop watching and think about something else.
Why haven't you slept with anyone?
The question had been on his mind, a lot, but he surprised himself by asking so bluntly. She shrugged her shoulders. I just decided I want to wait until I get married.
That's what Tracy said, but...
It's a long story and very boring. He looked down.
I'm sure it's not surprising that I, of all people, would have trouble comprehending why anyone would put it off.
He didn't doubt she knew about his life choices. He'd purposely flaunted it in her face, but for some reason he felt ashamed to admit it to her right now. His gaze slowly rose to meet hers. He wanted to know.
Oh, gosh, she sighed.
Okay, but don't say I didn't warn you. She smiled and gave him a look, giving him the opportunity to change his mind. He didn't. When I was 16, my parents finally allowed me to date.
16?
He leaned back in his chair, trying to imagine.
My parents never had a say in the matter. I was 11.
11? That shocked her. He shrugged like it wasn't a big deal.
Yeah, I'll tell you this story someday, if you'll continue with yours.
He believed he was lying to her. He'd never told anyone about his first time. All right. I was 16 and there was this boy, Roni. I knew he had a reputation, but he was cute, and he asked me out. We, you know, started out slow, holding hands, a goodnight kiss, the usual stuff. She blushed. She's actually embarrassed? He had to bite the inside of his cheek to hide his amusement. Eventually, he tried to get me to make out with him after our dates, in his car. And I tried, but the more I tried, the more he wanted. He started wanting to, you know, but I didn't feel right about it. I felt like things were going too fast, and I wasn't ready. He'd ridicule me and call me a baby.
Hi, Paul,
a group of girls called from the street as they walked by. He flashed them a quick, annoyed acknowledgement and turned his attention back to Reese, encouraging her to continue. She frowned and jumped ahead in the story. My parents were out one night, and he talked me into showing him my bedroom. She looked guilty and embarrassed again. He started kissing me, pawing at me. He said he loved me and that if I loved him, I would do it. He pushed me down on the bed and... She went blank for several seconds. Completely blank.
Reese, you okay?
She finally snapped out of it. Mostly. I just couldn't. She looked sad or bothered about something. She closed her eyes, a noticeably painful memory.
Roni became so angry.
He called me frigid and a few more names before he stormed out, leaving me to hate myself, to cry. I was only 16. She tried to smile, but didn't quite manage. He'd said he loved me, and in return, I rejected him. I felt bad about hurting him. I was so confused. I ran after him. I wanted to apologize. I was going to ask him to give me another chance, tell him that I'd let him. I didn't have a car of my own, so I headed to his house on foot. Roni lived about a mile away, and my best friend lived between us. Reese's expression grew dark. When I came up on her house, I saw his car parked out front. I thought, oh, poor Roni. I hurt him, and now he's begging Kylie to talk to me about it, help him. I even thought that if I told him in front of Kylie that I would let him have sex with me. She can't even say the word. Paul wondered how anyone her age could still be so awkward with it. I thought it would help me. Kylie would be a witness, so I'd have to. I knew she'd be a little shocked.
She was religious, but she told me several times I was crazy not to do it with Roni, that she would if she was me, because I already wasn't going to the celestial kingdom. That's what they call Mormon's heaven.
And she said if I ever did get baptized, my sins would be washed away anyway. She always told me how lucky I was that I could have all the sex I wanted, and she wished she was a non-member, so she could too and just get baptized later. Reese smiled again, but Paul watched quietly. He already knew how the story would end. It was late, so I sneaked around to her bedroom window. I should have known, but it just shows how stupid I am. I reached to tap on the window, but there they were. She stopped and squeezed her eyes shut. They stayed shut for too long.
That kind of thing happens every day. You can't let it ruin your life.
You think my life is ruined? She laughed. He stared at her blankly. He thought his life, without sex, would be. Yeah, well, my stupidity was too big and obnoxious for me to ignore. Reese started speaking faster, like she was racing to finish and be done with the story. I thought he loved me, and I thought I could let him do that to me, and it horrified me to think that I almost did. I mean, I can only give that away once, and whoever I give it to is going to be the one I have to remember giving it to for the rest of my life. I want it to mean something, not only to me, but I think it should mean something to him, too. Like I said, it's a once-in-a-lifetime experience for me. It should mean something to him. Her voice was quiet by the time she repeated her point. They both sat quiet for a while. But then I had to ask, how do you know? How do you know the man you give it to is worth it?
Roni said he loved me, and I believed him.
The only way I'll ever be able to trust that a man appreciates, he's going to have to say he loves me in front of a preacher. She did the unconvincing laugh thing again. Apparently, I'm not a good judge of character, so that piece of paper is all I have to go on, to trust. Her comment about being a poor judge of character made him wince.
Actually, I get it, I think, Paul said.
Her logic was unrealistic, but he understood. They'd finished their ice cream long before, and it had been driving Reese crazy to have the dirty, sticky napkins on the table. She grabbed them and took them over to the trash receptacle. By the time she turned back, three girls had run up the stairs squealing Paul's name enthusiastically. One of the girls, a redhead, sat down on Paul's lap and put her arms around his neck while the other two watched. The redhead said something in his ear. Reese watched his eyes grow wide, and he smiled at her. He said something back. Reese moved closer but felt awkward, not wanting to interfere with any plans he might be making to take this girl to the bathroom, back alley, frock, or his apartment. She decided to leave him to his friends and started down the steps of the ice cream shop.
Thanks for the ice cream, Paul.
See you tomorrow.
Denaria, wait. He said something else to the girl on his lap and stood, abruptly, before the girl had her feet firmly on the ground. She held onto his neck and pressed her body against his while pretending to steady herself, and then she giggled at him.
I'll see you guys around, he said, and ran after Reese.
Where are you going? I said I'd walk you home, he called to her. I thought you'd rather hang out with your friends.
Seriously?
His expression matched his tone. He grabbed her hand brusquely and led her into the street, where they turned and headed toward Oceanside. She glanced back at the girls, trying to figure out how she'd misread the situation. The girls gaped at her, discussing how they hoped Paul would get back to normal now that he was finally going to get her out of his system. He stopped at one of the little side street markets, bought two beers, and handed her one, without asking if she wanted it. She didn't really want it, but she took it anyway. It seemed easier than turning him down. He grabbed her hand again, and they turned the corner and headed east.
What if you never get married?
Are you making fun of me? I know I'm a disappointment to my gender. Every breath I take puts women back years with my old-fashioned ideas. But I can't help it. And as much as I'd like to marry, the sad thing is, I probably won't. I'll be 25 in a few months. He stopped in the middle of the road and stared at her, waiting for the punchline. She laughed and jumped to her own defense. Where I come from, there's some unwritten rule that the men marry right after their missions. Something about unmarried men over 25 being a menace to society or something. She raised her eyebrow at him.
Are you calling me a menace?
He did his one-sided smirk. Well, the girls on this island don't seem to think so. Or maybe they do, she giggled. He smirked again, considering her comment.
You're still a baby, Reese.
I know I am. She meant it differently than he did. More than half of my high school girlfriends were married by the end of their freshman year of college. The rest all dropped like flies over the next few years. I'm pretty much the last woman standing.
You must be exaggerating. If it were really true, you'd have been snatched up by now.
She took a long swig of her beer and started walking again, and he knew he'd hit a nerve.
Obviously, I've said something wrong.
She shook her head but kept walking. He grabbed her arm and forced her to stop and look at him.
What?
She rolled her eyes and tried to make light of it, but he could tell he'd upset her.
Tell me, please?
Where I grew up, it's hard for someone like me. I don't belong.
What do you mean?
I'm not Mormon. Almost everyone else is. When I was a kid, it didn't seem to matter as much, but as I got older, my best friend in sixth grade made me take the lessons because her parents found out and wouldn't let her play with me. When I got to the lesson on baptism, I said I wanted to, but my parents wouldn't give their permission. They wanted me to wait until I turned 18. With that decided, that I wasn't getting baptized, she couldn't associate with me anymore. Since she couldn't be around me, all my other friends slowly drifted away, I guess having to juggle the two of us. If we invite Reese, we can't invite Jamie. They stopped inviting me. In eighth grade, one of my teachers brought up the restoration of the priesthood and temple work in class, and the next thing I knew, one of my old friends, Penny, called me the Antichrist because I wasn't a member, right in front of everyone.
Private school?
Paul interrupted her. No, public.
Why the hell are they discussing religion in public school?
I don't know, Reese laughed. It had happened so often, she'd never thought of it as strange. I guess since it is mostly Mormon, they kind of forget that the whole world isn't. My mom would often tell my dad and me how her morning staff meetings always seemed to turn into a religious discussion. She'd pretend like she knew what everyone was talking about, because she'd learned long before that it wasn't worth it to say anything. My mom was a really nice person. I can picture her sitting through meeting after meeting, squirming but keeping her mouth shut so she wouldn't offend anyone, even though they were inadvertently offending her.
Sounds like someone I'm getting to know, Paul said under his breath.
His eyes darted to her briefly. I'm not saying everyone was like that, like Penny or Jamie's parents. Most kids were really nice. They treated me very kindly. They were polite, but I was an outsider.
Wow, that's rough.
We moved to the other side of town just before high school, and I decided to be smarter about it. As long as I went to a few activities and church with them once in a while, they let me feel like I was part of their circle. My freshman year of college, I met Sean. He was such a nice guy. Not the kind of guy I usually found myself attracted to. Rhys paused, as if she was putting her foot in her mouth. She glanced at Paul suddenly and then down. She blushed. Not that any of the guys I ever crushed on returned the favor, but Sean was so sweet. I worked at a little snack bar at the university. I worked the boring shift, so I didn't have much to do. He'd stop in and hang out with me, keep me company. After forever, he finally asked me out, and we dated a few times. He had this goal. He wanted to wait. He'd never kissed a girl and didn't plan to until it was over the altar at his wedding, so we never had any physical contact. I thought it was so refreshing. Sweet. I mean, it was sweet. She'd enjoyed their carefree relationship, free of all the physical complications that made her last relationship fall apart. He asked me to marry him. We got along so well, like real friends, and I cared for him. I have to admit, I might have been feeling a little left behind with everyone I knew getting married. I accepted. As soon as I said yes, he asked me what temple I wanted to get married in. I about died. I'd become so good at impersonating one, I didn't realize he didn't know I wasn't Mormon. Sean freaked out. I thought it was over. I cried for days, but then he called. I thought he called to tell me he loved me, that it didn't matter, but instead, he told me I needed to let him baptize me. I heard it as more of an ultimatum.
You know he's gay, right?
Paul glanced at her from the corner of his eye. No, it's actually pretty common, the whole not kissing until the altar thing. A lot of the boys I knew in high school wouldn't date before their missions either.
Being gay is pretty common, too. They're all gay.
Rhys giggled at the thought. She looked up at him. Sure, he had to be joking, but he appeared perfectly serious.
The religious guilt thing is just driving them to come up with creative ways to deny it to themselves. I'd bet those couples who don't kiss until they're married have pretty frustrating, even non-existent sex lives.
Rhys had never thought about it that way. They have kids. It's important to them to have kids. She tried to decide if Paul just needed to make sense of a world he couldn't comprehend, or if she lacked the ability to comprehend reality.
The imagination can do great things. I've been with not-so-appealing girls who've rocked my world, but only because I have a good imagination.
He actually laughed, but stopped when he noticed Rhys didn't laugh with him.
So why did this make you believe you're never getting married?
Sean thought I'd be excited about having him baptize me. The funny thing is, I would have. I'd always thought I would be baptized, eventually, but all I heard was the ultimatum. He loved the idea of baptizing me, but I want to be loved for me, not because I'm a name on a line of some membership record. I spent my whole life being accepted or not accepted based on that. At least she'd always told herself that. If he really loved me, it wouldn't matter. If any of them ever really cared about me, it wouldn't matter. I'm done with it. I don't want anything to do with that anymore. I've never been accepted, and now I don't want to be. She'd gone over these thoughts a million times since her parents died, the last, only true relationship she'd ever had. Shoot, she said, her eyes filled with tears. She wanted to kick herself for allowing the loss of her parents to creep back to mind. She missed them so much. She cried every time she thought of them, so she rarely let herself.
Hey, don't cry. I really don't know what to do when women cry. Rhys, I don't know how to fix it. What am I supposed to do?
Paul started to put his arms around her, but hesitated. In his experience, that always turned out to be a bad idea. Girls tended to dislike being hugged after being told, just after sex, that he didn't love them and would never love them. When they did let him comfort them, he just ended up wanting to have sex again, but then they would cry all over again because having sex didn't change his mind about loving them. Rhys wasn't crying because they'd just had sex. He decided to try to hug her after all, hoping she would stop.
I've never been able to figure it out. I do everything I can to avoid this.
She stiffened and pulled away as if he'd just shocked her with a cattle prod. He chalked it up to guessing wrong. A half a second later, she laughed and reeled in her emotion in tears.
I'm sorry, I talk too much. I like listening. I could do without the tears, though, he admonished.
The word on the street, probably from the few girls who aren't madly in love with you, is that you're callous. I'll bet your reaction to, or your intolerance for, crying women has something to do with that, she said.
I didn't mean to give you a hernia, putting all that strain on your sympathy.
I think you have it wrong. The girls I hang out with don't love me. It would have to be the girls who do. They'd be the ones who'd call me callous because I have to make it clear that I don't love them back.
He put his hands in his pockets, dropped his head, and twisted his mouth in contemplation. He didn't feel callous. He cared. It bothered him they always wanted more from him than he could give. It was just a result of who he was, a man who could never fall in love. He didn't believe in it. She giggled, and he looked back up at her, relieved she'd stopped crying.
That's how it works? For me, Paul said, embarrassed. Maybe not so much for them.
I think you may not be a good judge at telling the difference. I think that even your coitus club groupies are in love with you. They're just better at hiding it than the girls who don't make it into the club.
Paul's face twisted into confusion. Coitus club? Groupies? What the fuck is that?
Oh, shoot. Reese squeezed her eyes shut tight. She looked almost sick.
Nothing.
He glared at her, not accepting her answer. It was either that or Paul's playmates, but that sounded too much like Playmate of the Month or Playboy Bunnies, as in Hugh Hefner, and more women line up for that than they do to be in your club, and I didn't want anyone to be confused that I thought of it as a good thing, not that I call it that to anyone, except maybe Claire once or twice, but
you're rambling.
You're right. I'll shut up now.
She took a long drink of her beer. I'm still not sure what you're talking about.
The girls at the shop. There are others, too. They swing by the shop sometimes to join in on the impromptu meetings. But they sit around and talk about you, discuss who you've been with, compare notes on your performance. She hung her head and looked so embarrassed. She actually looked around as if searching for a hole to crawl into. She made him laugh.
So you think I've let a few of the wrong girls slip through the cracks and into the club? I'll draw up a questionnaire, start weeding them out more carefully.
How do you tell? How do you determine? Or what clues you in that they'll fall for you more than you want them to, you know, after just once? He half laughed again.
That's my secret.
Oh, she accepted his answer so readily, it disarmed him.
They wilt.
They wilt?
Yeah, they wilt. At some point in the process, while we're going at it, sometimes all I've done is kiss them, haven't even had a chance to get to the really good part yet. They just kind of melt on me. It's the best warning system I've come up with so far. At least I thought so.
Thanks for the heads up. I'll get to work on that questionnaire.
Anytime.
Do you stop?
What?
When you get the early warning, do you stop before it's too late so you don't have to break her heart?
He didn't really want to answer that one, but he did with a guilty frown.
No.
You're kind of a self-destructive masochist, then. He didn't mean to laugh so loud.
You're very observant.
His laughter slowly subsided as the reality of that hit home. He put his beer bottle to his lips and took a drink to stall while he thought about how observant she really was.
I'd prefer to use the terms self-indulgent, self-gratifying, and son of a bitch. There are a lot of girls out there who prefer my terminology as well.
He remembered what she'd called him the night of the dance contest. And asshole.
Someone recently called me an asshole.
They started walking again.
Reese, you're only 24. Nowhere near an old maid. You know that, right? Regardless of the culture where you're from, by the rest of the world's standards, you've got more than enough time.
That's what I told myself when I left home, she said the next words with a sense of humor, emphasizing each word. I have since come to the conclusion that I won't be marrying a Utah boy because I refuse to get baptized. She giggled and then changed her tone back to normal. The boys in the rest of the world, however, can't get past the first date if a girl won't full out put out. He stopped again to look at her.
Hey, don't look at me like that. It's true. I learned that from experience, a very good source. I have to face it. I may never get married. What source would that be?
They finished their beer and threw the bottles in a trash bin on the side of the road. The famous world-class drummer, she said quietly.
Are you kidding me?
Paul let out a string of cuss words, expressing a surprising amount of anger.
I knew there was something about that asshole.
Paul huffed incredulously. He wasn't just trying to make her feel better. Denaria, that asshole doesn't know which end is his fucking brain and which is his fucking ass.
Hey, Polly Pockets, calm down. He was very nice about it. He asked me to show him the sights, but when I told him I was new here, he suggested we go exploring together. He was cute and funny, and we had a really good time. She grew pensive. He kissed me. Paul still had a hard time hiding his anger, and the only other expression he could manage came across as disbelief. He asked me if I wanted to go back to his room. I told him I didn't do that on the first date. She looked at Paul again with a trace of humor in her eyes. I decided to try a new approach after what happened the last time I tried to shoot someone down kindly. He said he had a long tour coming up, meaning I wouldn't get a second date. I said, so it's a date, shall we say 7 o'clock 20 years from now? And he said, I'm not a patient man. Let's make it 10. We laughed. He walked me home, and then he left. And I'll never see him again. And that's when I realized I may never get married, because I'm afraid I might be too old-fashioned for the world outside my home state. Paul wiped the contented look off his face when he noticed the way she stared at him, probably wondering why her rejection pleased him. The drummer thing had been driving him insane.
Do you always tend to be so melodramatic?
He still looked too amused.
You're much too young to be thinking that way, and marriage is highly overrated anyway.
Marriage is ingrained into my whole being. I think I was born with a desire to be married.
That's why you were sad.
His eyes lit up, proud of himself for figuring it out. A dinner with the Swensons. You noticed that, did you? Reese closed her eyes, embarrassed.
You're not the only one who's observant.
He rushed on with the next bit to distract her from what he'd stupidly said.
She's married, has two kids, a prize of a husband.
A prize of a husband?
Isn't he everything a woman wants in a husband? Tall, dark, handsome, powerful, businessman, prolific, rich.
How about already married, when he prolificized her the first time? Yes, I had a moment of envy when I realized the new and improved model of Mrs. Swenson was no older than I am, and she has what I want, minus the fact that there is a discarded version of her out there somewhere. I could never consider a cheater a prize. I don't know their specific circumstances, and I don't mean to judge, but for me, I draw the line at cheating.
Prolificized? He chuckled. So much as you want to be married, and you don't think you will be, but if you did hit the jackpot, as in the way you'd see it, you'd still toss his sorry ass to the curb if he cheated?
I'd rather die alone, on my own, than die alone because my man is in another woman's bed. His brow flashed up and then down as he considered what she said. I did make a decision recently, though, she continued. I'm thinking if I'm not married by my 30th birthday, I'm going to give up on my dream and maybe just turn all promiscuous or something. She laughed, mocking herself. A long moment of silence ensued between them.
Will you promise me something?
He asked, his tone suddenly very serious.
Promise me you'll invite me to your 30th birthday party?
Another moment of silence before she finally broke out into loud, happy laughter. He laughed a little too, but the humor didn't quite resonate in his expression. He wondered if a spell existed, one he could cast to make sure she wouldn't marry by then. They arrived at the yard of Oceanside. She thanked him for walking her home and unceremoniously dismissed him before he could walk her to her door. He hung on, not wanting to say goodbye until it started to get awkward. He finally had no choice.
I'll see you tomorrow?
Yeah. Good night, Paul. Thanks for the ice cream. And the beer. He knew he had to finally call it a night with her, but wished he didn't have to.
Yeah, okay. Good night.
He half-heartedly started to walk away. Thanks for walking me home, she added, and for letting me talk your ear off. He turned and reflexively flashed her a designer Paul smile, the one he'd perfected to melt any woman's panties, wishing she would ask him to stay. She didn't even notice. She'd already started across the path to the stairs that led up to her apartment. He felt rejected, again, but he told himself he could be patient. Paul found Taylor at Tanked. The movie long over, Taylor had already managed to convince two different women he loved them. He'd planned to take them both home, but Paul's unexpected arrival and weird mood made him feel obligated to share. If Paul had really wanted a date, he could have found his own, but Taylor didn't understand how Paul would just rather not. Not tonight. But it wasn't worth the torment Taylor would inflict if Paul tried to explain. The last thing he wanted to do was try to explain. After a couple more drinks, they were about to leave when Paul saw Shelley at the bar with a man he didn't recognize.
Tay, give me a minute.
Meet you back at your place. Taylor left with both girls and Paul approached Shelley.
Hey, I hope Island Divers is treating you well.
Sure, I liked Paradise better, but I got tired of watching you drool over her every day.
Shell, I've been trying to apologize.
Have you met Mario? She reached to her right and patted the new guy on his back. He's from Brazil, too.
Oh, so you know each other?
Shelley laughed. Brazil is a big country, Paul. No, we didn't know each other until a few days ago, but we have a lot in common. She and Mario gave each other a look, suggesting they had a secret.
See you around, Paul.
Something about the way she acted didn't sit right with him. He didn't like that Mario guy either. He was what Paul figured women thought to be good-looking, but he had a bad feeling about the man. He brushed it off and made it back to his place, where Taylor and the girls had helped themselves to his private liquor stash. Taylor and his date left to go sleep on the beach, while Paul and Maya started what should have been a great night in his bed, but something was wrong. Paul found it hard to enjoy himself fully. He wanted to, but he remembered how Shelley had accused him of crying out Reese's name at the worst moment he could have. He didn't doubt her claim. He hadn't been able to get Reese off his mind, almost since the day she showed up. His determination not to make the same mistake again was getting in the way. Maya sensed his difficulty. She moved down and looked up at him through her lashes. He couldn't help the half-grin on his face, thinking how every woman who was willing to do that thought she was the only woman willing to do it, but it was on the menu so often, he wasn't complaining. He just had a hard time feeling the sincere appreciation the girls always expected. Maya went back to work, but took it deeper.
Oh, okay, he gasped. I'm impressed.
His admiration was fleeting. When he leaned back to enjoy the unexpected treat, the memory of Reese and their conversation flashed into his mind again. He would have to do what he'd been doing for weeks. He pulled Maya up and positioned her against him, being careful to look everywhere but her face. He pulled a condom from his pants pocket and found the release he needed, but the guilt returned once it was over. He rolled onto his side, facing away from her, and pretended to fall asleep. Quickly. The next day, a buzz went around about Paul and Reese finally getting together. Paul heard the rumor before she did and worried how she would handle it. With his notoriety, he could claim to be with any woman and no one would doubt it. There were women he didn't even know claiming to be his conquests, and no one doubted them unless he challenged it, but he rarely thought it worth the effort. Everyone believed Reese's denial, however, since her quick response came out so honest and sincere. She left no doubt in anyone's mind, especially Paul's. The idea absolutely revolted her. Paul and Taylor didn't spend much time at the shop over the next few days. They spent their time out on the water, diving, surfing, parasailing, anything and everything dangerous and exciting. At night, they hit the bars and hit on women. On Wednesday, Paul got wind of a plan aimed at making Reese the butt of a cruel joke. People at the shop had set up what was to make her believe they were all meeting up at Ray's for dinner, as usual for a Wednesday night. However, they would really be at Coconut Inn. She would show up at Ray's and be the only one from the shop, and for some reason, that gave them all a thrill. Even Tracy and Regina were sworn to secrecy. They didn't like it, but their need to fit in outweighed their consciences. The plan made Paul livid, but he worried about trying to intervene. He knew their attitude toward her was his own fault. The way he'd treated her after the first few weeks, the way he'd reacted after her diving accident, the incident with Shelley, one of their own had jumped shops because of it, and the jealousy. All the girls were beginning to notice how uninterested he'd become. Any attempt to interfere would only make it worse.
Chapter 17. Taylor stood with Paul on the side of the road in front of Paul's favorite restaurant, the only Italian restaurant on the island. Paul watched the road while they talked. He was stalling.
acting indifferent about getting into the restaurant, even though Taylor knew he didn't tolerate hunger well. Low blood sugar usually made Paul grumpy. Taylor suspected something, but he didn't bring it up, curious to see what his friend was up to. Paul's eyes grew wide, and Taylor finally understood why they'd just wasted the last 25 minutes standing on the side of the road instead of waiting for food he knew would take three times that long.
"I'll be right back."
Paul slapped Taylor's back and took off down the road a few yards before he stopped to wait. Paul stepped quickly to get into place. Reese headed his way at a pace suggesting she wanted to get somewhere fast. Paul knew she'd already shown up at Ray's, found that everyone had stood her up, and now her feelings were hurt. He knew about all of it, but he didn't want to embarrass her even more, so he didn't plan to mention it, though he couldn't wait to see what she would have to say. He purposely stepped into her path, and she almost ran into him because she held her head down. When she looked up and realized who she'd all but bumped into, she turned pale. He couldn't help the knowing smirk. He didn't say anything as they stared at each other for several seconds. She stared, surprised at his clean-shaven face. He rarely did clean-shaven. He usually sported varying stages of shadow, stubble, and beard.
"You're in a hurry, Princess Denaria."
She scowled, obviously in a bad mood, and possibly because he called her by the name he knew she hated. "Yes, I am." He smirked again, but didn't step aside.
"Where are you headed?"
"Home. See you around." She stepped around him, in a hurry to be on her way again. He moved to match her step and still blocked her path. She looked up at him again with an exasperated look on her face. He ignored it. She held a grocery sack in her hand, and he reached down to take it from her before she realized what he'd done. She grabbed for it, but he evaded her attempt and looked inside.
"A package of dried pasta and a can of spaghetti sauce? Looks like you're in the mood for Italian."
He cocked his jaw to one side with his tongue in his cheek, trying to hide the temptation to smile. He tossed his head in Taylor's direction.
"So are we. Why don't you join us?"
"No, thanks. I just want to go home." She was quick to reply.
"I thought we were friends."
"You can't say I haven't been friendly." He smiled again.
"Yeah, you're always friendly. You're a nice person, Reese. That's why I don't understand why you seem to be kind of feisty tonight. Are you mad at me?"
"No, I'm not mad at you," she finally sighed remorsefully.
"Who are you mad at, then?"
She glanced down at her grocery sack, still in his hands. "No one."
"Then what's wrong?"
He cocked his head. "Nothing." He gave up.
"Contrary to popular belief, Fratelli's is actually the best restaurant on the island, not Ray's. Have dinner with me. Join us."
"Please?
I need something pleasant to look at. Making eyes with Taylor through dinner is really hard on my appetite."
"I can't afford Fratelli's. I'm getting low on money. I'll have to cut my stay short 3 days if I eat here." Paul's expression fell. When they'd called their truce, she mentioned she would stay until her money ran out. He panicked for a second. He'd gone too long. It was time again to make sure she just happened to come across a little extra somewhere. He relaxed when he decided the next clients were going to be so impressed with her they were going to leave a ridiculously big tip with him to give to her. Problem solved. He found his happy place again.
"I'm buying."
Her mouth dropped open. "No, I can't let you spend that kind of money on me." He flashed his most devious smile.
"Okay, we'll let Taylor pay. He's loaded."
She glanced once at Fratelli's, giving him the slightest hint she might consider the offer. It was all he needed to take it as a yes.
"Come on. Friends, don't let friends eat bad Italian."
He winked as he held up her bag of store-bought spaghetti. He took her hand and led her, reluctantly on her part, into the restaurant. The waitress saw them walk in and her face lit up when she realized who it was.
"Paul, my favorite customer."
Being an older woman didn't stop her from gushing.
"Annetta, you look lovely tonight, as always," Paul said in Italian, then switched back to English. "You remember Taylor?"
Her smile dimmed as she looked at Taylor. She stepped to give him a hesitant hug. She turned ice cold when she turned to Reese.
"And this is Denaria."
Reese shot Paul an annoyed glance.
"It's the three of us tonight."
Annetta led them to a table, handed them each a menu, and Paul told her he wanted 2 cold Peronis. Taylor said he would also have 2. Reese just ordered water, and the men didn't do a very good job of hiding their disgust. So, Paulsville. Reese scoured the menu, though Paul hadn't even looked at it. I've never been to an authentic Italian restaurant. You said this was your favorite restaurant. What's good? Paul smiled and acted like he didn't notice the name she called him. You don't want what I order. Just read the descriptions and choose something that sounds good to you. But what do you usually get? My old standby isn't on the menu. It's something they make just for me. I'll just try that then. Trust me, you don't want what he orders. Taylor shook his head and stuck his tongue out. The waitress brought their drinks and readied herself to take their order. She asked Paul first, then Taylor, and finally turned to Reese. I'll have what Paul is having, Reese said. The waitress's expression showed surprise, but it quickly changed to irritation, believing that Reese just wanted to please him, like all the other girls he brought in. And bring us a bottle of wine, Paul said. Do you have something that would go good with our food? You know I'm a sucker for good wine. I'll see what I can find. Annetta smiled and winked at him, and then smiled shyly at Taylor before walking back to the kitchen.
I need to make my bladder gladder.
Paul stood and headed toward the restroom, outside and around back. The second Paul walked out of earshot, Taylor leaned forward and stared at Reese with the same intensity Paul got in his eyes sometimes, like he was trying to hypnotize her or something. She tried to ignore it, but the more she tried, the more forceful his stare became. She finally stared back, and a second later, he leaned away and looked off at the wall, the same way Paul always did when she stared back.
What's going on with you two?
Taylor finally asked, not looking at her again. Who? Me and the waitress? I think she's wondering what a girl like me is doing with the 2 best-looking men on the island. She took a shot at flattery. Taylor didn't laugh, but his eyes conveyed amusement. Reese hadn't had a chance to really get a good look at him before. She thought he looked like Paul. Not really, but yes, Taylor was a good-looking man. His long, sandy brown hair fell down to his shoulders in a messy, come-hither sort of way. His facial features were a little rounder, softer than Paul's, but his body was even more muscular. Paul was long and lean, a couple inches shorter. Taylor was bulkier, like a football player. He looked like he spent a lot of time at the gym. His eyes interested her the most, though they were a light gray instead of Paul's intense blue, and they didn't have the sparkly, mesmerizing quality that Paul's did. Taylor knew how to use them. The thought of Paul and Taylor sitting in a treehouse together as boys, practicing their eye magic on each other, made her laugh.
You and Paul, he leaned across the table toward her. What have you done to my friend?
He chuckled, but then turned serious again. We're just friends. Paul doesn't have girlfriends. I didn't say I was his girlfriend. I'm his girl friend.
I said Paul doesn't have girl friends.
She rolled her eyes.
He has sex with girls, and he has sex with friends, but I've never really known him to be so friendly to girls outside of having sex, except for you.
Taylor squinted while he waited to see what she would say to that. Paul and I have never had sex. Taylor's brow creased.
Yeah, I heard that the other day. That's what confuses me.
Well, you're wasting a lot of brain power that might otherwise be used to solve the world's problems. There's nothing going on between us. We're friends. Period. Taylor saw Paul walk past the window on the other side of the restaurant, which meant he was on his way back to the table.
Yeah, you're probably right. You're definitely not his type.
He leaned back, staring at Reese again until Paul sat down.
You and the waitress have a good time in the bathroom?
Taylor smirked, staring at Reese. Reese shot a look at Paul, revealing how she believed it was possible.
Tay, you're so crude. We're in the presence of a lady, and we both know Annetta is your type, not mine. She's still good to go for you, Paul smirked. Maybe she'd be your type, too, if she played hard to get.
Taylor glared at Reese again and smiled when he got the reaction he was after. She blushed but gave him a dirty look. Taylor and Paul drank their beer, ordered more, and reminisced about the old times. By the time the waitress brought the food, they were famished. Annetta poured the men's wine, and when she reached for Reese's glass, Reese started to tell her not to bother, but she didn't get the words out in time. Reese stared at her glass, full of wine, for a second, but then finally just picked it up and took a sip. Paul noticed Reese's hesitation about the wine and smiled when he saw her decide to drink it.
Cheers!
He clicked his own glass to hers before she tried it.
Cheers!
Taylor said as he put his own glass in the mix and then swallowed a mouthful. No sipping for him.
Good?
Paul swirled his glass and sniffed as he watched Reese take a sip. Not bad, she said, and they exchanged smiles. She looked at her plate. She didn't recognize anything except for the salad and the pasta with cheese sprinkled on top, trying to melt, but not quite managing to. A huge slab of goat cheese sat on top, sprinkled with a bunch of red, slimy things. A piece of meat, she wasn't sure what kind, lay under the strange sauce. She remembered something Tracy had said about the kind of meat the locals eat.
Mmm, looks delicious, she said a little too enthusiastically, giving away her doubts about ordering Paul's standby.
She'd been so smug about having his favorite dish, she couldn't change her mind now. Reese played with her salad and pasta until she could no longer avoid trying the main course. She cut into the meat, hoping she'd recognize it from the inside, but it was covered so heavily with sauce, it quickly dribbled into every crevice she tried to create for a peek. She held the piece on her fork and stared at it, working up the courage to put it in her mouth.
Chicken, Paul said.
I know I'm a chicken. I told you I'm a confirmed big baby.
No, it's chicken. On your fork?
Oh, she said, relieved. I worried it might be iguana. I heard the locals eat them.
Mrs. Morgan's kitchen is where I get my fried iguana. I'm sure you've seen her little hole in the wall about 100 yards south of here.
Reese made a cringing face. She'd seen Mrs. Morgan's kitchen. It was nothing more than a shanty made of pieces of tin roof, tied together and held up by a few 2x4s. She used a wooden plank supported on 2 sawhorses for her work table and cooked on a dirty range oven, sitting in the middle of a dirt floor. Reese would never eat there.
It's not too bad, actually. Tastes kind of like the chicken you're afraid to eat right now. Or am I just trying to give you a false sense of security? For all I know, the brothers may have decided to cut a few expenses and have started buying their chicken at the iguana farm.
Paul seemed to be having too much fun grossing her out, so she popped the meat into her mouth and chewed as happily as she could. I'll have to try Mrs. Morgan's iguana sometime. Thanks for the recommendation. She took a sip of wine and then cut another piece, reconciling all the conflicting flavors in her mouth. The entree was not only edible, it tasted quite delicious. She glanced over and noticed Paul watching her. There was a vulnerable quality to his expression, but it disappeared, knowing she'd caught him staring at her. She smiled reassuringly. It's good. I'd order this again. His teasing expression turned into his bashful smile. She thought maybe his bashful smile had become her favorite of all his expressions. But I lied about the iguana. I will never, ever try it, she said, and they laughed.
I need more wine if you two are going to giggle and make googly eyes at each other all night like teenagers.
Taylor didn't sound happy. He raised his hand and hollered to get Annetta's attention. The waitress returned and poured more wine into Reese's empty glass. Reese couldn't believe she'd emptied the first one, but she took another sip from the fresh glass. They continued through dinner, eating, drinking, and laughing. Taylor demanded their attention through the rest of their meal by trying to humiliate Paul, telling every embarrassing thing he could remember Paul ever doing during their friendship. Paul would retaliate by telling his own side of the story, which often proved Taylor was too often the reason for the trouble they always wound up in. Their ribs hurt from laughing so hard.
Just don't expect him to take you to Vegas for a quickie wedding, Reese.
Taylor laughed at the look on both of their faces.
He'd most likely end up wearing a new pair of cement shoes at the bottom of Hoover Dam if he shows his face there again. He counts cards, he continued. Tay, Paul warned.
His eyes were dark and serious.
She doesn't need to know about that.
You have to be smart to do that, right? She glanced at Paul, recalling her suspicions about his intelligence and ignoring Paul's sudden touchiness on the subject.
There's no waiting period back home either. How about I call Annetta over? We could make it a double ceremony.
Paul sidestepped Reese's question and shut Taylor down quickly with that.
As if you'd ever come back home, Taylor said under his breath.
He picked up his wine glass and looked out the window while he chugged the rest of its contents. It took a minute for Taylor to find his usual carefree play-the-fool self. Reese watched them both, hoping to decipher the private signals passing between them, but they'd known each other too long and she had no clue. Eventually, they worked back into more stories.
"Remember in the 7th grade when you, me, Bryce, and David, we surrounded that girl in the hall and wouldn't let her go? What was her name?"
"Donna," Paul said with a quiet chuckle.
"Donna Raymond.
Yeah, man, she was cute, but she was such a little Miss Goody Two-Shoes. She told Mrs. Garrick that she saw you and that girl..."
"Evelyn Peterson," Paul inserted quietly.
"Yeah, having sex under the bleachers during lunch. You were giving us an education."
Taylor looked at Reese when he said it, gauging her reaction.
"What? Am I supposed to be shocked? Paul apparently hasn't changed much since then."
Reese caught the end of Paul's grimace.
"Well, we decided to get her back by scaring her. We had her surrounded and were passing her back and forth," Taylor continued. "She hugged her books and cried like a baby."
"That's mean," Reese said, flabbergasted.
"She deserved it."
Taylor believed it.
"It was mean," Paul said. "Well, anyway, she tattled on us for that, too."
"My mom was so pissed,"
Paul whistled between his teeth at the memory.
"She grounded me to my room for a month and said I couldn't be friends with you and the guys anymore because you were a bad influence on me."
He laughed so hard he reached up to wipe a tear from his eyes.
"Hell yeah, she didn't know her baby boy was our esteemed leader."
"Pfft, not me. You were always the creative one," Paul said. "But you were all, to hell with this, we're breaking them out and running away. Next thing I knew, we'd all hopped a train and ended up in Detroit."
That made Taylor laugh even harder. He leaned back, grabbed his stomach, and leaned forward again.
"Yeah, and the only reason we got caught is because that hobo made a pass at Bryce."
Taylor was still laughing, but Paul didn't seem as eager about the ending of the story.
"He did more than make a pass at Bryce, Tay. He beat the shit out of him, and if someone hadn't stopped him, that pedophile was about to rip Bryce a new one. Well, the rest of us were so shocked, we stood there with our jaws hanging on the ground," Taylor laughed. "I just barely figured out boys did that to girls. I had no idea that boys did that to other boys. But you didn't hesitate.